Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
One goal to win the title. It's as simple as that. Could it happen? Balotelli. Aguero.
And Mo Farah's coming down the straightway. And he's going to be attacked by Debra Meskel, and Mo Farah's got the double! He's the Olympic champion again,
Two to win. It's got throw, it's got to go to the keeper's end. He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins! By the barest of all margins!
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Barest of Margins with me, Simon Hughes. This is the podcast that delves deeper into the world of sport to reveal how athletes and sports players derive marginal gains from the specialist trainers and scientists that they work with, or the innovative techniques or strategies that they use to triumph over their opponents and try to realise their dreams. Today, my guest is the Irish Olympic marathon runner Stephen Scullion, who came 11th in the London Marathon of 2020, the second highest placed non-African runner and the highest in the UK, with an amazing time of 2 hours, 9 minutes and 40 seconds. That's a marathon in under 2 hours and 10 minutes. Amazing. He was also second in the Dublin Marathon the year before. Stephen is 33, a highly experienced long-distance runner, and he has some fascinating insights into how he's been able to achieve those remarkable times. Interestingly, it's partly through the discipline of not pushing himself to the absolute limit in every training session. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and give us a review on iTunes. So, this is Stephen Scullion revealing how, partly through a disciplined mindset, he achieves those marginal gains. But first, he tells us some bare facts.
First of all, thanks very much for having me on. I'm grateful to have this opportunity to talk with you guys today. Simon touched on a few things there. I'm a Irish Olympic marathon runner. I've ran 2 hours, 9 minutes and 49 seconds for the marathon, which is about 4:57 per mile. If you want to go to your local track, that's 74 seconds for a full lap of the track. And it's a lot of laps.
So that's a 400 meter.
400 meters in 74 seconds. And it could be like 100 odd laps, maybe. 100 and something. It's a long way.
I've cycled behind you when you're training.
Sure.
And I mean, I was on, I think, about 19 kilometers an hour on my bike.
Yeah.
Which is a good speed. And you're just coasting.
Yeah, and that's the...
You do it for 2 hours, that speed, as well.
Yeah, so I think it's 19.8 kilometers an hour, maybe, for 2 hours, 9 minutes. But I think you touched upon it there. This is not an overnight drill. This is a lot of years of... First of all, it requires levels of sporting ability and of course, things like this. But that then needs to be groomed and... trained in a way that can create some form of longevity in sport, in my career, in my body. You need to know your limits. You need to know how to stay healthy. But you're looking at probably the best part of 80 to 90 miles per week of running over a 15 to 20 year span with, and I guess we'll get into this more deeply, but with a lot of just a very disciplined life, a very disciplined lifestyle, very disciplined choices around nutrition, around sleep, about lifestyle. I make disciplined choices about where I live in the world, which is, you know, why, of course, I met you, Simon. I came to a place where I knew I could train well, I could live well, I could be away from distractions, perhaps at home. And yeah, it requires a lot of discipline. But I guess on that note, that's the fine balance of when you want to be better, and you always want to be better, which is a phenomenal trait to have, but it comes at a cost, because then there's days where discipline needs to trump desire to be better, and you have to understand you can't be better every day. Some days you just have to take it easy, and that's the best thing you can do that day for your career and for your life and for the psychology, etc., etc. But actually, you have this burning desire to be better every day, and you need to almost fight with yourself and let's make some discipline choices today rather than that desire to be better.
That's a really interesting point. And you know, the sportsmen that I've spent a lot of time with, principally cricketers, you see the likes of Ben Stokes, for instance, who trains to the absolute nth degree. He can't leave alone. He can't leave the ground until he's done extra training virtually every day. Certainly this was the case a couple of years ago. And it felt like at times he was almost overtraining. And, well, you can explain whether that is possible. Sure. Can you overtrain? But then he was advised by various people that perhaps you are overdoing it, actually, and need to leave something for performance itself, in a way, to so you can raise your levels in performance. But I guess if you are that competitive type, which a lot of the leading sportsmen are, and they wouldn't be in sport, professional sport, if they weren't competitive, they are tempted to try and extend themselves every day in training. And you're saying that isn't actually the best way of going about it.
Yeah, so a couple of things I'd touch upon there is, yeah, you're going to be surrounded by athletes in top-end sport, professional sport, elite sport, international sport, whatever you want to call it. You're going to be surrounded by guys that are oftentimes appear to be pushing a little bit too hard, and it's that desire to be better. Sometimes it can also be an insecurity surrounding how much training you need to do to be capable of performing at the level that you'd like to perform at. And that's something that comes down to then a psychological element that you need to get on top of. That part of your brain or part of your psychology that thinks, you know, it's think of it just as an idea. It's just an idea. I need to do X amount to be better. I need to do this amount. And you know, that idea and that drive has obviously pushed you to be, you know, a great, great athlete. But at the same time, it's probably frustrating for the people around you to watch you almost do more damage than good at really important times in your career. And, you know, I've been guilty of that, you know, perhaps like Ben many a times, where I'm sure the coaches surrounding me and the team surrounding me are going like, golly, can we just get this guy to take it a bit easier for a week? You know, I just came off Rotterdam Marathon, and that was 3 weeks ago. And when there's emotions involved and you don't get the result you've perhaps felt you deserved, it's very difficult to make disciplined and logical decisions in that moment. You're always pushing to do more and pushing to do more. And, you know, long story short, In the 2 weeks, I then tried another marathon 2 weeks later. And in those 2 weeks, instead of putting my feet up for 10 days, recovering and letting my body just get better, and the fitness was there, so all I needed to do was recover and get myself on another start line. Instead, I was greedy, flew to altitude, tried to get fitter, tried to lose weight, you know, tried to get more flexible, all these things. I tried to improve about five things in 2 weeks, and all my body needed was rest and recovery. And so sometimes there's a crossover between, are you doing the training that needs to be done from a logical perspective, or are you feeding this part of your psychology, this desire, this drive, this you know, part of your brain that nags at you on a daily basis to do more, more, more. And there is, in fairness, there is a, from a physiological perspective, there's what's called supercompensation. And so we'll never know. Yes, perhaps some of this overtraining from myself, from an athlete like Ben, from plenty of other athletes in the world, there is a concept of you have to have done the hard work at some point. So it might potentially take away from a performance that weekend, from a performance in 2 weekends' time. But you'll never really know, had you not put in all that work at some point, would it not have paid off in a month's time or in 2 months' time?
Is there a sort of guilt factor, in a way, to that? The fact that if you don't do the work, you're kind of going into an event feeling guilty because you haven't pushed yourself to the nth degree in training.
Yeah, so I've learned probably in the last month that every athlete, and the way I describe it is every athlete paints this picture in their own head, and the picture is basically an idea of how much you need to dedicate to perform at the level that you'd like to perform at. And so let's say, for, you know, you mentioned, you know, Ben, maybe for him it was, I need to, if I do not train until I'm absolutely exhausted leaving the training ground every day for 3-4 hours, I cannot possibly perform at the level that I'd like to perform at. And he might take that further to, then when I go home, I need to eat the perfect meal. I can't eat chocolates. I can't drink alcohol. I can't smoke. I need to go to bed at this time. I need to hydrate this amount. You paint this picture that it's an idea, a concept, and it's stuff you've learned over your whole career, that all these little performance enhancements, you could call it, marginal gains, things like this, you've constantly been made more aware of things that could improve you. And so your picture continues to develop, and it develops into this idea, if I do not cover all of these little details and these little angles, I cannot possibly perform at the level that I'd like to perform. But I think you forget that it was just an idea, and actually it didn't. I'll tell you a great example, and it's in a sporting context, I guess, in tennis. And Andre Agassi had created one of these pictures that he needed to be perfect. His backhands needed to be perfect. They needed to go down the line. His forehands needed to be perfect. They needed to go right down the line, etc., etc. And he was losing matches because he wasn't trying to beat his opponent. He was trying to constantly play like the number one tennis player in the world. And a coach essentially told him, Andre, you need to stop trying to be perfect, and you need to just start beating the opponent that's standing across the court from you. And so all of a sudden, instead of trying to hit it down the line, on the line, he was maybe 3 to 4 inches inside the line, which was plenty good enough to beat the opponent. But in the past, he had just been beating himself by trying to be this idea of perfect. It's a psychological construct that, yes, probably if you don't follow your own rules, you start to beat yourself up internally. Why didn't you push yourself in training today? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? And I guess that's the part of the athlete that has certainly got you to that level that you're at, because you can't constantly leave the training field, or, you know, the place you're running early and be satisfied and, you know, be happy with that. But you also, one thing I've learned recently is there's going to be periods of your career where you've almost got to flip this greedy mindset, that you could call it, this greed to be better, this greed to train more, this greed to push your body to new levels. You've got to flip and come away from that greed and learn to be really satisfied with how much you've done, especially when it comes to important competitions, important games, important matches. And you've got to completely transform the psychology to, the best thing I can do is follow the logical and disciplined plan that was in place, you know, maybe months before to protect you, because perhaps you have become aware that you push and push and push and push and push, and you're not willing to, you know, as we talked about, you're not willing to make those disciplined choices towards the end or when it's getting close to the big important games or a big important match.
So tell us sort of how that plays out, you know, when you say you have to kind of recognize to stick with the plan.
Correct.
What is your plan, and how do you vary it during a week's training and sort of leading up to an event?
You might have big target, you know, every cricket club, football team, you know, tennis player, you're going to have games that you've targeted in the build up that are oftentimes purely for a training benefit, experience, etc., etc. Then you're going to have important games, and then you're going to have the biggest important game. And so this original plan has to have enough training. You have to be training in perhaps the right places where, you know, you can be the professional, act like a professional, behave like a professional, have access to everything you need, whether it's physio and you know, a gym and S&C and stuff like this. But then the way the training might be tailored, and this is just an example for everybody, it could be slightly different, but the training might be, there'd be a high load for a period of time. That high load might continue through the earlier races, and you might even have success in those earlier races. And then the training load might change a little bit to more, less volume but higher intensity. And then you'll have some slightly, maybe perhaps more important races. And then as you get closer to the biggest race, you'll go into what's known as like a taper phase. And that can be the hardest part for an athlete who has probably, believe it or not, really enjoyed. For people listening, you'll probably assume that the taper phase would be the easiest part. You don't have to train 2 to 3 times a day. You get to rest and recover more. It should be the dream. But for most, not most, I can't speak for all, but for a lot of top level athletes, the taper and recovery part is the hardest part. And that's when discipline, you know, the athletes that are most...
So when you talk about taper, you're talking about training with less intensity and for less time.
Yeah, less time, less intensity. I mean, in running alone, you have the number of times that you'll train a week. So that's like a quantity, you know, perhaps 14 sessions per week. You'll have volume, which is your total volume per week. I spoke earlier about maybe 140 to 160 kilometers. And then you'll have the third component, which will be intensity, which will be what effort level are you putting in per kilometer per week. So you're going to start to taper all three: volume, intensity, and frequency. And the reason discipline comes in here is because when you have, usually what separates the best from pretty good or a great result from a solid result is having the discipline when it comes to, you need to accept how much work you've done in the training phase. You need to accept how the early games went or races, etc., etc. And you have to, it's almost like you have to live to fight another day in that taper phase, because acceptance is really difficult. You want to do more. You want to be slightly better prepared. You want to be, but the time for that has passed. And all the, you know, the best thing you can often do in those final moments is just accept all the work you've done and at least give your body a chance by tapering, at least give it a chance to be fresh on the day of competition. And that's so, so difficult, because so many athletes, like I said, you know, want to constantly, I would imagine this crosses over into every platform of life, whether it's revising a book, revising a dissertation, it's that constant more, more, more. I could edit that a bit more. I could tweak that a bit more.
You know, my mother has a phrase, in fact, I'm talking about writing. Mm-hmm. She says, don't get it right, get it written.
Yeah.
And you can actually, writing is a good, a very good example, because you can't, there's no such thing as a perfect book, is there? And you could keep on revising it and redrafting it and rewriting it. And there's, in the end, you've got to get it out there, haven't you, for someone to read? Otherwise, it's pointless.
Yeah, and I honestly, I do the same with my training plans. I map out a lovely training plan, and you know, 2 weeks later, I'm tweaking it again. And there's this concept in the sports world of, do a plan, print it off, and not only print it, get it laminated, and the
so
idea
you can't change it.
Correct. And the idea is that it was probably a bloody good plan, like when you first did it, and you probably put a lot of time into it, and then what starts to happen is emotions creep in, and you might have had a bad training session, and so emotionally you've decided, oh, I need to do that again, or I need to do a similar one like that again, and of course there has to be a little bit of room for revisions and little edits, but actually most of the time it's emotional, and that's where discipline needs to be the sort of bigger force, I guess you could call it. And discipline is that discipline can be practiced on a daily basis, and it needs to be. So, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has heard of the discipline of making your bed in the morning, and the reason that's important is because discipline works. It can either work in a positive way, whereby...
Hold on, let me see if you've made your bed this morning. Can I go and have a...
Yeah, you can, live, yeah.
Let's see.
Right, go that way, go right. I mean, my room's an absolute tip, so...
Well, it's sort of made. I'll let you get away with it.
Well, no, it looks like it's made because I only sleep on the duvet at the top, but it's a great example because it could take you... You know, it could take you 15 seconds, or, you know, if you know, for example, that like milk upsets your stomach, like, but you prefer a coffee with milk, that's another discipline choice. Have the discipline to not have milk. And why I'm telling you that is because one discipline choice can lead to another discipline choice. And so my discipline this morning would have been taking 15 minutes to stretch a little bit, roll a little bit, work out a few of the, you know, bumps in the muscles that sort of need sorted. And by doing that, I then potentially ran a bit slower on the run, which was important today. That was the discipline decision. And discipline leads to discipline. Whereas if you make an undisciplined choice, you skip the rolling, you don't make the bed, you do the run too hard, you'll probably go on to have a, you know, a poor quality lunch meal. Discipline then becomes a landslide, where before you know it, your discipline has gone completely out the window. And I often talk about the sooner you can get back to discipline choices, the better.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Now, just tell us, you've explained about the discipline of your running routine. Give us a little flavour of how a week pans out for you. Let's say it's a week or two before a competition.
Sure.
So see, maybe this week is a good example.
Yeah.
So just tell us how you've arranged your training for this week.
Yeah, so this week will probably involve, I'll run about 140 kilometers. It's actually 2 weeks before a big race in London, called the Highgate 10K. And so it'll be about 140K, which is probably about an 85 to 90% week. It'll involve two gym sessions. And really these gym sessions are around supporting the body from getting injuries and keeping it strong so that it can handle not just the volume of training, but the intensity of training.
So Monday?
Monday's going to be a couple of runs, 10K in the morning, gym in the afternoon, and then 10K in the evening. I'll be running 10K pretty low intensity, just nice and easy, nice and recovery. That's
Ooh, nice and easy.
My nice and easy is probably
17 kilometers an hour, isn't it?
Yeah, probably 16, 17 most days. Today, this morning was 20K at around 16, 4 minute Ks, and that was around the beautiful Richmond Park, absolutely gorgeous. So then Tuesday is a little bit of a faster day. It's what's known as like a double sort of threshold day. It's like a tempo-ish day where the intensity is probably about 85%, but it's at a lovely intensity that it's fast, but you're just right at that point before it getting tough, so you can feel really good, and that's kind of like that's a year-round thing to do that keeps the fitness really high. And so I'll probably do, you know, for example, 16k in the morning, 16k that night, and about 10k of each of those will be at around 3 minute per kilometer, which is 20k an hour. Wednesday is 20k, and then gym in the afternoon, so that's back to 4 minute k's and basically recovery. And when we talk about discipline, these recovery days are vital, because these are the days that hold the entire package together. And so without them, that's when you get injuries, that's when you get tiredness, that's when, you know, fatigue creeps in. Thursday will be a more specific day, so it'll have a little bit of tempo in the morning, which will be something like, you know, 12k, and four of those 2k's will be at the same tempo that Tuesday was. And then Thursday afternoon will be the final sort of specific hard session that can help the Highgate 10K, which will be about 10 days away at that point, probably about 8 or 9 days away, sorry. And so you have to, when we talk about acceptance, that's the last opportunity you can kind of push without it costing, you know, tiredness, fatigue, heading into the big race. So that'll be run at exactly race pace, at exactly race effort. And it might be something like 8 to 10 times 1K at, you know, I think 21k an hour, right at race pace, just getting used to how you might feel in, you know, 8 or 9 days time. Friday, you're back to recovery. Saturday, you're back to recovery.
And when you say recovery, is that still a bit of running?
Probably 10k in the morning, yeah. 10k in the afternoon.
Is there any days where you don't run at all?
Well, no, you're probably looking at probably about 8 to 10 of those a year where you've, you know, and I actually had one on Friday just gone. And but yeah, so I'll finish the week and then I'll talk about the recovery. So you've Friday, Saturday are going to be 10k in the morning, 10k in the afternoon, no pace. The only pace is you're not allowed to go faster than 4 minutes per K. So it's like a rule to help you recover. And then Sunday would just be back to the tempo type day, which is that year round tempo effort, good sort of, good for all round progression and sort of fitness maintenance, you could probably call it. So the full recovery day, a lot of athletes don't like full recovery days. It's kind of, some of that's a routine thing. Some of, every now and again, when we, you know, talking about discipline and patience and logical, every now and again, I take that full day. It's a really interesting reason. I kind of take it if I feel like I'm getting a little bit too greedy, a bit obsessive, a bit, and it's almost a day that I take just to show myself that I can. And it would be a bit like going on an evening out and for no reason, maybe not drinking alcohol, or just to show yourself that,
so
you
again,
still
it's a discipline
can.
Thing.
Correct. Yeah, I think it's good to show yourself I can do that. And it might scare you at first, whether it's, you know, taking a full rest day or but where that really helps is then if down the line there's a day you need to rest because you've got a bit of an injury, or you understand that you're a bit tired, or maybe you've just been advised to, you know, by taking them on the days that you didn't even need to, just because you can. I think that really helps further down the road. And I got to tell you, the small margins that separate the best is not a willingness to work hard. Every athlete that is pretty good at a professional level is willing to work hard. Very few are able to accept the days that it's okay to just take it a little bit easier.
How do we apply that to life generally. I mean, not many of us are lucky enough to be professional athletes, certainly not professional runners. So how can that be applied to your daily life, do you think, this sort of discipline of not always pushing yourself too hard?
Yeah, and so, you know, I think if we remember back years ago, if we were studying for exams and we were told that every, I don't know the correct answer, but I think it's every 60 minutes you're supposed to take a 20-minute break, because the brain, it's scientifically proven or whatever, that it will actually store more information having taken that little break. And so I'm doubting very much. There might be some guys listening that would perhaps need to take a more disciplined approach to training. And if a coach has hit you certain exercises to do or certain repetitions to do or certain weight to lift, for example, you know, trust yourself and trust your coach and stick to the sort of perimeters or the statistics that they're saying that you do. But actually, you're probably going to find a lot of people listening might take a more disciplined approach to life. And that can be moderation. That can be not pushing your body too hard when you know that it's tired. I think when you start to bring discipline into your life, and that could be food choices, that could be how much alcohol you drink, that could be how many nights out per week that you sort of have, and you socialize and you try to cram activities in, you might just start to find that you're a little bit fresher, that you're enjoying your work a little bit more. And you know, the concept of Rome wasn't built in a day. There's you know, deadlines, and sometimes there's going to be days where you need to work that little bit harder, that little bit longer than other days. But usually the reason you've got yourself into that pickle was poor discipline choices 2 weeks before, or maybe 3 weeks before, when you just couldn't be arsed doing a bit of work, or you couldn't. And so, you know, you're going to be able to carry discipline into your life as a listener all the time. And you're probably sitting there right now going, that's me. Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that's me, actually. I mean, I'm thinking, funnily enough, going to it, it's a long time since I did any exams. But when I, those, what you're saying is, those walks to the exam where I'm frantically reading a few extra notes at the last minute, mm-hmm, are probably pointless.
Yeah, and that's acceptance. That's like probably the guys doing the best in the exam 6 weeks before had a perfectly good plan in place that, you know, worked around their schedule, and maybe it was 2 hours a day for, you know, 5 days a week, and they'd worked out how they would cover every chapter that they needed to, and how they would absorb every chapter that they needed to. And that's no different from training. You know, in training you can't go and run 500 kilometers 2 weeks before the race and think you're going to absorb every bit of that and beat someone that has spaced it out nicely. And so that shows you the importance of a plan, and then having the discipline to execute that plan. And it can be difficult, don't get me wrong. This is where sports people and you guys in life, there has to be sacrifices. And I have to sometimes sacrifice social activities, going to social events, because how can I possibly do 2 10K runs and gym and go to a social event all day? But that's part of the cost of wanting to be good. So, you know, for you, the cost might be to get those 2 hours of studying in the afternoon. You have to skip the afternoon part of a barbecue. And
is it rewarding in the end? You know, is it satisfying? Because you use the word sacrifice there. Mm-hmm. Is it worth the sacrifice, what you get out of it?
Yeah, well, I seldom think the best things in life come from really disciplined and logical approaches to things. And I can tell you that before I even race at a competition, I'm almost already satisfied enough just based on my application to the maybe previous month or two. I think all humans care about is application. Did you give yourself a chance? And no matter how good you perform in an exam and in work in a sport and competition, if you know that you didn't really try, it means nothing to you. Whereas even if you fail, or call it fail, you don't meet the requirement or meet your obligations or goals and things like this, but if you know with your hand on your heart you really did, you know, 8.5 to 9 out of 10 in terms of the application. You really nailed it all down. You put a good plan in place. You were disciplined enough to do it. You were willing to make certain sacrifices, and you did it. And yes, it might not work out that time, but you kind of step away and you go, yeah, well, it didn't work out this time, but you know, next time I think it will, because I showed myself I can do it. I showed myself I can stick to the plan. Then all you need is more time, another opportunity to prove yourself, another opportunity to, you know, put another plan in place, tweak it a little bit, follow the rules, stick to your discipline, give it another go. Whereas if you've just winged it in a way, there's no sort of sustainability in that. There's no longevity in that. And you'll just believe it was luck.
So in a way, you're saying that winning isn't everything. It's almost the process towards competition or performance or whatever that can be the satisfying part. So just talk to us about the London Marathon a couple of years ago, and you obviously prepared for that incredibly well. You performed you got your personal best, 2 hours 9 minutes whatever, but you had to make a decision during that race around 20 miles or maybe halfway through, where there was a pack of mainly Ethiopian Kenyan runners up ahead who were clearly going to win. Mm-hmm. You know, were sort of a minute ahead of you or something. How did you decide that you weren't going to try and chase them? Because that is almost sort of halfway through the race, accepting that you're not going to win it.
Yeah. So the interesting, I sat down with a sports therapist probably 4 years ago, and we realized that a lot of the mistakes I was making in races, which might have been that day perhaps chasing after that group, it might have eventually became a mistake which might have ruined the race completely, and I wouldn't have, you know, ran a personal best then. But we tracked a lot of this decision making in competition was as a result of very poor discipline in the build up. And so if you've taught your brain and your body in a way that discipline doesn't really matter, and that could mean you go out on a Monday morning, you were prescribed 10k, you decide to do 14k, that's a poor disciplined sort of, it's not reckless in terms of life recklessness, but you've taught your brain that because it felt like doing 14k, it could go do 14k. And so then come race day, you have this really disciplined and logical approach to a race. Maybe you're going to run by heart rate, maybe you're going to run by pace, and you know that that's going to get you from A to B as quick as you possibly can. Or boxers are going to have this in a fight, they need to stick to a certain game plan, you know, see them in every sport, there's going to be a really good plan of how you can win that event. But if you've taught yourself poor discipline in the build-up, it's a bit like the quote of everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth, and that's the Mike Tyson classic. But the more discipline you've practiced in a build-up, the better you are on race day of making calculated decisions and logical decisions versus emotional. And of course, I'd have loved to have chased that pack. You're right, the winner was going to come from that pack, but I knew that would then affect, I would probably have a 1 in 5 chance of being able to chase that pack, run with them, and keep going and have a, you know, an amazing day, maybe 1 in 10, and maybe an even better day than I could ever dream of. But it's so small, that's a 10% chance, versus if I stick to my plan, I probably had an 85% to 90% chance of it, you know, being successful. And
and successful in the sense that you came 11th, so yeah, that is success in your book.
Extracting the best possible result out of your body on the day, whether it was a perfect preparation or not, success is extracting the best out of yourself. And we're all human, so sometimes your best isn't great, sometimes it's not excellent, sometimes it's not your absolute best, but everyone on any day of the week can still extract the best out of themselves on that day. And some days it's going to be absolutely amazing and you're going to be superb. Other days it's just going to be, instead of a 10k run, you're going to go for a 1k walk. It's okay. That's being human. But I still think on every day we're willing to, you know, extract something out of ourselves, and being disciplined and dropping your ego on the days where you are struggling, and dropping ambition on the days that you are struggling. And I see so many athletes on big days, big competition days, that know they haven't prepared well, or perhaps carrying an injury, maybe the weather isn't suitable either, and they still try to hit the target that perhaps was a target 4 months previous, and they don't take the build-up into account, they don't take the weather into account, and they ultimately fail. They get, you know, maybe halfway through or not even as far as that, and that's a almost an ego, an arrogance. Acceptance is so important. And am I prepared? Have I followed my plan? Sometimes it's not your fault. Life things come up, and being able to adapt in that situation and be able to say, okay, that was a goal 4 months ago, but you know, perhaps now this is a better goal, and I'm going to go and achieve that today. And what you don't realize is that by doing that, you've set yourself up for next time. You've shown yourself that you can be disciplined. You've shown yourself that you can extract the most out of your body. And all you need is a slightly better build up for the next one. And you'll probably go break that record or win that race. But if you can't, you know, extract the best out of yourself on the day, you're just teaching yourself. Maybe then the opportunity that you get where perhaps you could have broke a record or you could have won, you might make mistakes on that day. And you know, sometimes in life, we only really get one opportunity to, you know, whether it's a team, whether it's an individual, whether it's a, you know, a cyclist. If we're given one opportunity in life, we're the lucky ones. And so you need to make sure on that day you're disciplined enough and you'll follow the plan and you'll really show people what you're made of.
So go on, what is your goal for this year? Give us one, your main goal.
Sure. So I, like, this year, 2021 wasn't a good year for me. I struggled. I came off a brilliant year in 2020 and, you know, I probably should have followed a similar plan that I did in 2020, and I tried to change everything, and of course it was always with the intentions to be better, and in the end I likely should have just followed what I did in 2020 very closely and changed little things, but I tried to change everything. So this year was about getting back to that sort of form that I had in 2020, which I've now done. And so I guess for the rest of this year, Ireland have a really good chance at the European Championships to perhaps get a medal in the marathon. And you know, if I can go out and run, at the minute I'm 209.48, and if I can get myself down to 207.28, then I'm really, well, first of all, I'd be the greatest Irish marathoner that has ever sort of lived, which would be incredible. And yeah, like I've actually moved away from time goals, or I'm just trying to, by being disciplined and by being patient and logical, I'm trying to give my body a chance to almost reach its potential. And that's just, it's such a easy thing to do in a way, but yet it's a really difficult thing to do. I'm trying to not get in my body's way of reaching its potential. Stop holding it back by making poor choices or rushing decisions or and like I say, that's often difficult because desire gets in the way of discipline and ambition gets in the way of discipline. And yeah, so I think I believe in my body again. I believe in my potential again, and there's a real confidence brewing. And then because of that confidence, I'm back to making the really disciplined and good choices that hopefully, given the right opportunities, I can perform at a really high level.
So that's Stephen Scullion. Look out for his performances in the European Championships this summer and beyond. There's obviously an Olympics not that far away as well. So, you know, preparation towards that undoubtedly.
I think it gives some real insight into the mindset of an elite athlete and maybe provides some pointers to how we can all improve the quality of what we do. Please like and share this podcast if you enjoyed it, and don't forget my other weekly show, The Analyst Inside Cricket, providing regular insight and opinion on events in the cricket world. Next time on this podcast, we hear from the nutritionist of England's World Cup winning cricket team about whether those ginormous cricket lunches and teas aid performance. It may surprise you to know that some of them actually do. Until then, thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.